Hello, my name is Aaron Visman, and I'm very happy and lucky to follow that presentation because we can have sort of a sense of what the full application of, I guess I'm using the old school model, but the theory of planned behavior kind of looks like. And she just talked about sort of the qualitative piece, and this is something that we presented on last year. And I'm going to talk about the quantitative piece. It's sort of, obviously it's a different population, different health behavior that we're looking at, but I'm going to sort of talk about the way we moved into the theoretical constructs, the way that we translated those into scales and explored this issue of heart adherence among HIV-positive immigrant Latinos. The study was conducted two years ago, in central North Carolina, where I used to work as part of Dr. Scott Rhodes' research team. I have no financial relationships, but I wanted to mention that this was funded in part through AMFAR. And quick background, Hispanics and Latinos in the U.S. have been disproportionately affected by HIV/AIDS. They experience rates of infection 4 times higher than non-Latino whites. We know that immigrant Latinos experience disproportionate AIDS mortality rates, often due to delayed clinical presentation. And I mean, that's sort of where the research ends in a way. We know that Latino immigrants wind up coming in late to care and have poor health outcomes. And that's sort of, there hasn't been a lot of research that looked at those that get into care, sort of their adherence from that point on. And that's what we were trying to explore with their somewhat unique population of immigrants in rural central North Carolina. We know from other studies amongst Latinos in general, not necessarily immigrant Latinos, we've seen some studies, cohort studies, where they were significantly more likely to report heart non-adherence. We also know, especially in the rural area of North Carolina, that immigrant Latinos are subject to factors known to affect adherence to heart and viral load amongst people living with HIV/AIDS. Such as poverty, unstable housing, deficits in HIV knowledge. Some of our other studies that we've conducted have shown pretty steep deficits in HIV knowledge in this population. We know that migration alone has been associated in other studies with heart non-adherence. Immigrant Latinos may be at increased risk for non-adherence for a variety of reasons. Depression, as was talked about before, is sort of a pretty established factor. We were interested in looking at this concept in terms of the way side effects, perceived side effects, deportation, stigma, the ways those things additionally affect immigrant Latinos and sort of may sway their benefits, cost benefits, decision-making on how adherent they stay over time. Of course, non-adherence has severe implications, medication failure, et cetera. I wanted to make sure I defined heart and adherence, highly active antiretroviral treatment or therapy before I went on. And adherence, meaning the extent to which the patient continues on the agreed upon mode of treatment under limited supervision. And I highlighted agreed upon because it sort of gets at exactly the population that we're looking at, or exactly sort of the type of patients we're looking at. Obviously, it excludes people who have not gotten into care, but it also excludes people who have actively decided not to take HIV medicines. So essentially, we're looking at the people who are committed to their regimens and whether or not they're adherent to an optimal level or a less than optimal level. We use the theory of planned behavior, rational cognitive model, which assumes that those sorts of that individuals weigh costs and benefits of a behavior before performing the benefit, maximizing cost, minimizing response. And she's already talked about this, but this is sort of the general simplified three-factor model where the three factors, we did the qualitative research and developed the behavior scale, subjective norm scale, and perceived behavioral control scales, which are theoretically contribute independently to intention, which predicts behavior. Attitude is sort of the consequences of your action, adherence in this case, subjective norms, obviously the people around you, and behavioral control is similar to self-efficacy, and it refers to things such as, are the pills that you're taking too large, or the sort of things in the environment. Step one, step two, we're talking about correlates that have been identified using the quantitative measures. We used the three theory of planned behavior constructs. We measured those. We also used some constructs external to theory of planned behavior. The theory states that pretty much demographics and everything else is sort of thought to flow through those three main factors. That's why it's external in quotes. I'm not going to go through this because I think you've already sort of indicated the way these scales are created. There's sort of, I guess, the sum of products, so your belief and then an evaluation of that belief. So how likely is something to happen, and then sort of evaluate, and we sort of sum those products to create the scales for attitude, control, and subjective norms. We use the index of sojourner social support as another scale in our assessment. We used trust and evidence-based medicine that looks at medical doctor trust and researcher trust and acculturation scale. Some demographic and treatment variables were collected. And this was the first issue with our study, I guess. As I said before, we were looking at adherence of people in care. So, and what we found, basically, using our measures of intention, that maybe they weren't the best. Literally everyone except for one person in our study reported to the highest degree that they intended to take their HIV medicines. So pretty much everybody fell in the A or B category here. And we wound up removing intention from our analysis because there was no variance in intention. And we wound up doing binary logistic regression model where we collapsed these two categories. So basically it's your 100% optimal adherence in the last month or not. And that's sort of what we're looking at. The good news, I guess, in terms of self-reported adherence is that almost everybody reported above 50%. Pretty much everybody was either in the A or B category. We computed means of subscales, got alphas, did Pearson's chi-square and t-tests for equality means, tested for collinearity, and did finally a binary logistic regression model. We recruited from the ID clinic and Wake Forest University School of Medicine. We administered the assessments in Spanish, the native Spanish speaker, and we did it in the clinic after the appointment, so there's obviously some bias there. We paid people $40 cash. This isn't exactly the setting. I just found this slide from an earlier presentation sort of to exemplify the catchment area of Baptist Medical Center, but I'm sure it's actually much wider than that. So these are our participants. They're about 70% Mexican immigrants, immigrants from Mexico, and then a pretty broad spectrum of immigrants from other places. And due to our small sample size, we really didn't look at even Mexican versus other because it doesn't make a whole lot of sense because there's Cubans and people from Puerto Rico in there who have obviously a much different immigration experience. So this is how it sort of breaks down in means tests by variant statistics. People looked about the same in terms of the numbers of pills they were taking each day. We classified, 19 as non-adherent, 49 as adherent. They had really similar lengths of time on HIV medicines. Each group was pretty similar on complementary alternative medicines, sort of medicines that they used to treat infection outside of what their doctor was recommending. They were really similar on having an HIV case manager in terms of the percentage. Not 100%, but they had reported having case managers. None of these were included in the logistic model because they didn't meet our cut point, which was below 0.25. Age, they were similar in age, similar gender breakdown, acculturation was very similar. The first thing that we'd included in the model was employment, and people who were employed, there's a higher proportion that reported adherence. So attitudes was one of the other theory of planned behavior constructs that was kind of in the direction we expected. Positive attitudes, the higher means had a higher mean score, significantly higher with the adherent population. Subjective norms didn't come out as significant at the level that we set, so we didn't include that in the model. perceived behavioral control was significant at the level we wanted, but not in exactly the direction that we would one may assume. Same with the sojourner social support. It was sort of not exactly in the direction that you might assume. And trust in doctors was, you know, higher trust in doctors seemed to be associated with the adherent group. And so this is the model that we finally put together. Obviously, we have a pretty small sample size, so it didn't come out as significant. You can look at the adjusted odds ratios and sort of see the directionality that was a little bit curious here. But as I said, there wasn't a particular factor that came out as significant. However, the model itself was significant at p-value less than 0.01, and it predicted 79% of the non-adherent individuals in the study. So, somewhat useful model, draws a lot of questions. This is an exploratory study, and I guess the questions are sort of leading to the directionality of some of those factors and the reasons that the way that social support really and social norms and social experience sort of affects people's adherence over time. And just as a reminder, we did not use intention because of the lack of variance. We basically looked at the three main constructs as they were associated with self-reported behavior over the last month. And in the final model, we didn't include subjective norms. Obviously, some limitations due to sample size. As I mentioned, there's some bias because we were asking people questions about their adherence after their appointment in the clinic, and the people are going to report that they're committed and wanting to take their medicines in that sort of setting, you would expect. As I mentioned, these are what came out as significant in the bivariate analysis: attitude, employment, trust, perceived behavioral control, and the social support scale. As measured by the theory of planned behaviors, social norms was not significant. And I think that's one of the important things to think about in this population. It may have been the way that we measured social support, but people overall sort of reported a positive influence on their social reference in terms of their adherence. And I guess it's not surprising that there was a lack of variance there. However, the perceived behavioral control, and as I said, the sojourner social support scale, their significance in the opposite direction sort of raises some questions about the people who are adherent, maybe when they sort of initiate treatment over time, if they're experiencing a lot of sort of outside influence and they report a lot of influence from reference and sort of a generalized social support over time that's higher, it may sort of indicate that there's other people beyond their sort of medical reference that are contributing to their decision-making about adherence. So I don't want to go too far beyond our non-significant findings, but I guess the ultimate conclusion that we're coming to is that we just need to think about, I guess the recommendation would be to think a lot about reevaluating people's sort of social context once they're in treatment over time to sort of assess what those sort of social influences are and to sort of bolster the positive attitudes that people have and reinforce those as related to HIV heart adherence. Excuse me. So finally, I guess, we originally started off with the theory of planned behavior as a model that was really practical in terms of exploring this issue and using qualitative data to learn more about the social context of behavior. And then we've created this assessment and implemented it, and we found that pretty beneficial. And in terms of my own thinking, I guess, about looking at adherence and my recommendation for other people and the way that I'm pushing forward with this is to think of sort of the behavioral ecological models as a larger framework in terms of learning history and social influence over time, and not to disregard theory bland behavior, but sort of think of them as two models that are both sort of explaining the differences. I wanted to acknowledge people that were associated with this study, and thanks a lot.